All right, hey, what's up? This is Evan.
And Michael.
And this is episode 3 of Dungeon Talk. This is our third take, I think, at it, because Michael said something to me right before we started that was pretty funny, and I think we should talk about that first.
No, I think it'd be best not to.
Because every time we do a podcast, I have to go back and try and adjust Michael's volume to make it match mine, because he has a problem with
making mouth love to a microphone.
And I think, is it because it resembles a penis too much?
Not exactly, but my comment was, is if they made a microphone that looked like a vagina, I probably wouldn't mind getting my mouth a little closer to it.
So, using that, what I'm thinking is that you don't like to be close to the penis. Because it resembles a penis too much. Or because it resembles a microphone. Maybe
it's a microphone.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do kind of like last time where we just jumped into one of our topics. So you've got a whole list here of topics that you want to get to. But one of the first things that you want to get to is a few things that happened in my game last week.
Right. There's just some things that happened that in and of themselves, I think they kind of jump into some of these other topics that some of them were suggested by a friend of mine, Rob, who's put some comments on the website for us. And he was part of that group I played with in Cleveland for so many years. We started the rotating DM thing. This is one of the things I wanted to talk about. So one of the big things for me that I liked was the whole thing with the bridge and the booby trap that mm-hmm. we set. So again, just a quick recap. We've been fighting these creatures in your game that use these alchemical fire bombs. They're little bags that have some kind of substance in them, and when you throw them, they explode. And we had fought a couple other creatures that were using them, and when we killed them, we were able to recover a couple. And we'd used them ourselves, but at the end of this day, we had 3 left. And we kind of knew which way the monsters were coming. We knew they would probably come to this bridge. So my character being the rogue, I'm like, let's build a booby trap using these fire bombs so that as they're crossing the bridge, they blow up, and maybe we can, you know, that'll give us an advantage in the fight. And one of the things that I liked about that is that you didn't even have me roll. You just kind of let that happen. And I don't know if it's because we talked about in the past, you know, sometimes rolls are irrelevant, and or if it was just because you really weren't having fun and you just didn't want to deal with it. I don't know. But I liked that you just kind of said, okay. And I kind of explained to you how I wanted it to work and when it would go off to maximize the effectiveness. And that basically just happened. So I really liked that. I felt like my character had a big win.
You had a big idea and you were able to accomplish it.
Yes. So for me, that worked. But at the same time, I thought it could have been better. So this is what, it's in my mind, I thought the bridge should have blown up. Like, because it didn't. It went boom and the people on it.
I know. And so, like, you guys were basically, it was kind of like you went and bought fireworks and you don't know how powerful they are. So they're like black, like little M80s.
Yeah.
And you think you have dynamite.
Yes.
So you're waiting and waiting and waiting and then pop. And you're like, wait, is that it?
Yeah.
That was the explosion? Yeah. All right, let's go get him. So I know it would have been this big dramatic thing. I don't know if me as the DM, if I should have embellished so that, like, if I could have made it better. But when you guys were using these bags, I just made up this thing in the game where you guys found these bags of powder. And they have strings of different colors tied around them. The red ones, when you throw them, they hit something, they explode and make a fireball, and they deal some damage.
Right.
When you guys were using those when you first found them, you were using them against things that had like 8 hit points and 10 hit points. So if you hit it and I had a good damage roll from it, because I would roll like a D4 or D6 to see what the damage would be from it. One or two hits, you might kill something. But here, you're fighting big things, and then also you have them like on the bridge.
So they're spread out.
But you only had 3 of them.
We had 3 left.
And it's a big wooden bridge, and it would be the equivalent of like, you know, putting fireworks on a real bridge. Yeah, like they might blow up and they might hurt somebody, but they're not going to have any effect on the stability.
And I guess
of the
that
bridge.
Makes sense. But in my head, that's what was going to happen. And it could have been this epic moment.
So you had this big buildup inside where, like, okay, this is going to work. And then...
And it did work, but it didn't work to the same level. So one of the things that I thought you could have done, again, this is a two-week perspective looking back on it, is the fact that you didn't have me roll, maybe you could have. And if I had rolled pretty low, then kind of what happened would have happened, that it worked, but it didn't really do what you wanted. If I rolled really well, maybe I had found a strategic place to put these fireworks that it really would have collapsed the bridge. So that way I would have been rewarded for
say,
a good roll.
I could, like, going into the next game, I could, like, say, okay, this part of the bridge seems to be catching on fire. And then the bridge could start burning.
Could kind of build to that.
And build, like, this burning bridge.
But at the same time, and I don't know if you've done it on purpose or not, and I kind of doubt it, but in my head, right now, we are playing the movie Blazing Saddles. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't seen all of it. I've seen
hilarious
parts
movie.
Of it. Yeah.
But it's almost exactly the same setup.
You love Mel Brooks movies, and I have only ever watched one or two.
Young
that
Frankenstein
I liked.
Is still the single funniest movie. Most
I know,
funny
but I have
movie.
Trouble sitting and getting through those movies. I have trouble getting
okay,
through
anyway,
them.
Okay, anyway, so when we watch Blazing Saddles, kind of the big ending of it is there's all these bad guys that are coming into this town. And so you've got two basic PCs. You got the sheriff and the Waco kid. And everybody else are just commoners. And then you got all these bad guys that are riding in. And in the movie, it's a fake town they've built, which is ridiculous, but it's a Mel Brooks movie. But it's kind of the same thing. You know, we've got three NPCs that actually have some skill at fighting. And everybody else is commoners. And we got all these bad guys coming. And
that's another thing is that that you have commoners out there with you that you're controlling.
Yes, that we're kind of using them as like NPCs, we're commoners, that kind of thing.
Just to get some extra hits and extra damage.
But in the Blazing Saddles, when the big epic battle happens, they've got this fake town set up that the bad guys are going to ride into, and it's laced with dynamite. And there's a scene where they're ready to blow it up, and they push the plunger, and nothing happens. And then the Waco kid has to shoot this ridiculous like 500-yard shot with a pistol, hits the dynamite, boom, and then all of a sudden stuff happens. And in my head, secretly I was hoping that the bridge would have failed so that I could have had that moment where I would have stood up with my bow and shot this ridiculous shot and hit the fire bag, and that would have triggered it. Because I've already tried to do that, because we've had two or three battles where I've tried to shoot one of these fire bags out of the air. One time a guy was already holding one. I tried to shoot it out of his hand, and every time I failed. So I just thought, oh, if that could happen. Because in my head, we're already playing Blazing Saddles. Like I saw this happening. And, I mean, that could have been a story that I would have told for the rest of my D&D life, is the time that I shot this arrow.
Do you think
it hit the bomb, blew up the bridge, epic.
Do you think you could have gotten this idea to me in any way other than just taking me aside and saying, look, I want this to fail because I want to try and do this. This is the big picture of what I want to have. I know that I can't create the story. Do you think it's okay for a player to go aside and say, I think it would be really cool if we did this, and then I want the opportunity to have this big moment.
I don't know. I think you could do that for other characters. Like if I've seen something maybe that Rob's character, like it'd be so cool if Rob's character could do this. But I don't think doing it for my own character would work, because it would take away some of that excitement, because I know that you're trying to give me that moment. I think it would have lost a little bit. But in my head, that's what was going to happen. And I was so excited at the same time disappointed in how it happened. And again, I don't know if there's any great answer for that, but like in my head, it was going to be the coolest thing ever. And it was still cool.
If you guys,
wasn't the coolest thing ever.
Okay, you guys have these other bags that have different colored strings.
Yeah, we don't know what they do yet. We're going to find out.
Green, blue, and black. And you guys don't know. If you would have put those bags on the bridge, it would have been the craziest show you'd ever seen. Like, wild things just would have started happening.
Well, we're going to find out soon what they do, and maybe that would have been better. I don't know.
But you're apprehensive to use them because you don't know what they
do. Right, we're afraid. Like,
and I really like that. Because that was my plan. My plan was to have these bags do these weird things, and you're not going to know what they do until you throw one
because
we
did some experimenting. We tried to figure them out, and it didn't work, and that's fine because we don't have any talent at that, and we were just trying random stupid stuff to see what would happen.
It was a long process of,
nope.
Does this work? No.
No.
does this work?
And, again, no. And that was part of the reason I had fun doing that, because right. at one point I was afraid that the bag, like when it opened, would explode. Uh-huh. So there's a whole
in
big
my diff- head, I knew that nothing was going to happen, but I tried to go along with your like right. tension,
yeah.
and just say
and that okay. worked, because I was afraid that I was going to blow myself up. I knew I would survive, or felt I would, because mm-hmm. of a earlier I had been hit by one. Which I guess should have clued me in that it wasn't going to blow the
you
bridge
should
up.
Trust me at this point that I'm not going to say, okay, you're Michael's dead. Character died because he was like, he just opened this bag to yeah. see what would happen.
But that would be a cool story as well. But anyway, so we did all this experimenting, but we don't know what those do. So part of me, I'm afraid that, okay, we're going to shoot the basilisk and we're going to get it almost dead and we're going to throw this at it and it's a rejuvenation potion. It's like, oh, look, now there's two basilisks.
Yeah, I mean,
he's twice as big and strong.
It could have, depending on what you do with it, it could have a good effect or right. a bad effect.
And that's why we're nervous, because it's in the unknown quantity.
I'm glad that you are, because that's what I wanted.
So at some point, we're going to get into a desperation moment where we have to, and then we'll just see what happens.
And then you'll all die.
Probably we'll all die. So again, to wrap up that topic, I want to make sure that people are comfortable asking their players for feedback, and that players are comfortable giving it. And a lot of times, maybe email, like we play every other week, so maybe I don't give you feedback that night that's fresh in my head, good or bad, but a week later I sit down and go.
I think the email would be a good thing, because a lot of times when you ask me when a game is over, when we did a 5th edition D&D playtest, when it was over, you were like, so what'd you think? And I don't know. I got to go home and I got to debrief with yeah. myself, and I got to think about everything that happened and how I thought about it. Because a lot of times I have emotional reactions to things, and in the moment I'm angry or upset or something. And then I'll go back and think about it and kind of say, well, no, it wasn't that bad. This is the reason that it happened. And now I understand why it happened. So in the moment, I don't want you to say, so how'd it go? So this is probably good advice for people too. Like, sometimes if you're an emotional person, you know, it may not be a good idea to right away say, well, this was the worst game I've ever played, you know, just because something happened that really, sometimes when you take a few days, a few hours,
get
whatever,
some perspective on it,
and you think about what happened, then you'll say, I understand why he did that, and you know what triggered it, and it makes sense to me.
Right. And I just think that's good advice, and my buddy Rob had said one of the things that he's dealt with and he thinks we should cover is when you have a player that's distracted at the table, or is distracting to other people at the table, you know, on their iPad, they're using their computer as a character sheet, and it seems like they're always doing other things. You can tell they're surfing the web or they're on their phone. And I just think that kind of goes together. We covered half of this topic, 99%. We're going to cover this part, 1%. Just have a conversation with them. They are there at your table to have fun. And if they have work issues or wife issues or girlfriend, boyfriend issues, and they're having to deal with that.
Do you want to talk about this? Are we starting a new topic?
Yeah.
Well,
they're kind of combined.
People who do other things at the table.
Right, and it's going to be a pretty short topic, because I think they go together.
It could be a long time.
Could be a long time. Is you just have a conversation and just be like, hey, I noticed that in the game tonight you seem like you were distracted.
What about eating? Because this is something that we do at our table at the beginning of every game. We eat.
Yeah, we always order food, usually Chinese. And
so
then,
you obviously have no problem with that. Somebody yeah. sitting down with food.
That doesn't really bother
the table.
The two things that kind of bother me as a DM is when they're constantly distracted. And they're like, they're on their cell phone, or they're on their iPad, or they're on their computer. And a little bit, it happens. I do the same thing, especially now that I'm trying to do the whole live tweet thing. I get sometimes I'm doing that. But for me, it's usually a very short burst. Like, you know, I do a little tweet, and then I'm back to the game. But, we've had players that it looks like they're on their computer doing whatever they're doing more than paying attention to the game. But they're there to have fun. And so maybe you just have a conversation. Again, maybe they're not liking the game that I'm running. Maybe they want a more combat game. I'm doing too much story. They want a story game. I'm doing too much combat. So maybe I can incorporate the things that they want to keep them more involved. Maybe try to get them to have a role at the table. Maybe they run initiative for you. So every time it's initiative, rather than me writing it down, I say, hey, you know, Bob, can you track initiative? So while I'm getting my monsters ready and getting the minis out and I'm drawing my combat, grid where everything's at, that character sort of, or that player, I'm sorry, gets everybody to roll initiative, plugs it in, he tracks it for me. That way I'm forcing him to be engaged at the game rather than doing what he's doing. And at some point in time, you just maybe evaluate whether or not that person needs to be at your table. I know that's the extreme, but it happened to me. I was in a game, I wasn't having fun, and it still took me several games before I said, I don't want to be here anymore.
And you were the person that was sitting at the table.
Yeah, I was the one that was on my phone.
On your BlackBerry.
Yeah, and maybe I could have had that conversation because I wasn't asked, and I just eventually got bored and I left the game.
But that brings up that there's two different kinds of people. There's people who do it when they're bored. Like, there's not enough happening. There's people that need stimulation.
Stimulation, yeah.
And when they're not getting it from the game, then they turn to something else. So they pick up their phone or they open their laptop and then they're doing something else. And then when the game comes back to them, then they get back involved. But then there's a different kind of person who just, that's part of the game. Like, they sit down, they have their phone or they have their computer, and that's part of the game to them. Like, I'm going to be on this while we play the game. Yeah. And I hate it. I hate it, and I don't want to sound like I need all everyone's attention, like a teacher at the front of the class, like, all eyes on me. Hey, you, over there, you know, put your book away, you know. Right. I'm teaching, focus on me. I don't want to come off like that, but it's kind of like if, you know, I'm sitting at the table and I'm DMing, and let's just say we have Nico, Rob, and you. Rob is sitting in the middle across from me. You're on my right, and you're on your iPad. Even if you're just sending a tweet, and then Nico's on my left, and he's on a computer, we're humans, and I'm interacting with everybody socially how I know how. So I'm looking around the table for eyes, you know, and I'm looking, and I kind of feel like, hey, if you're doing something on your iPad and Nico's doing something on his computer, but I want to get your attention or I want to do something, I kind of feel like I'm taking you away from something else and distracting you from something else. And I hate that I have that feeling because I shouldn't. I know. I feel like at the table because there's been a few times that I remember playing with you when you were DMing and I was – before I was a DM and I was just a player, I sat at the table and I'd have my phone out and I might be doing some stuff on it. And now I feel terrible about that. Like, I don't ever want to do it again. I think when you sit down at the table, your other distractions are gone. If it's hard for you to sit down and not have some other kind of input, if you have ADD and you don't have any Ritalin and you need 100 things going on, I understand that, you know.
Right.
But I guess I would just like to – my thing about it is that it's very respectful as a player, and it's very helpful to the DM when everyone tries to stay involved all the time. And when you have your eyes on, you know, what's going on and on the DM. Now – on the same level, if you're not having fun and as the DM I'm not keeping you involved, then that's my fault. And I understand.
But again, you need to be able to have that adult conversation and explain, hey, I was on my phone a lot tonight. Here's why. Work issue, family issue, whatever. Or I was just bored. You know, I wasn't really into the game. And it could be a one-game thing. We all have those off nights.
Sure.
Where it just doesn't work for whatever reason.
And I wouldn't want to have a conversation with somebody just because of one time.
Right.
If it was one night where if this thing happened to me with my college classes and then I came to your game and I just sat there with my head on my hand and I had my phone and I just looked distracted, you'd probably think like maybe something happened with Evan, you know. And, you know, that's
But if it happens
fine.
Every game, at some point I need to have a conversation like, are you having fun? You know, do you want me to do something with your character? Are you bored of your character? You want to try something different? You know, try to get you engaged as a player as well as get your character engaged. But for me, the biggest, because I'm like you, I don't really like that. It kind of bothers me. Part of it, again, is that ego thing. Like, I'm the center of the universe right now. I'm the DM. I got a lot on my plate. You know, respect that. But what really bothers
me. It's not necessarily just like respect that, but it's also like, help me. Help this
that's
go.
Fair.
Help me. Help this go smoothly for me. The more attention you give me the faster things go.
Well, and just social cues, like the nodding of the head, lets me know that, okay, you understand what
it
I'm saying.
It makes everything easier as the DM going around the table. And it's kind of, it's that not acting, but whose line is it anyway?
Yeah, improv.
It's that improv where you sit down and it's a give and take. There's a relationship. There's like an improv thing going on where, you know, you got to go back and forth. And if one side is putting it all out there and the other side's not really giving anything back, it stops the momentum, it slows things down, and it makes it a lot harder.
So I'm with you. It's a distraction. My advice is if it's one time, let it slide. If it continues to be habitual, maybe you have that conversation. But for me, the thing that I don't like more is when people distract other people. And what's funny about this is I do that. And I know that I do that.
And like, what's an example?
Well, usually I do it more of being funny. Like, you know, I'm a big movie person. So like when something happens, it reminds me of a movie, I'll be like, I'll just randomly quote a line from a movie and I'll kind of get us off topic. Or, you know, I'll be like, oh, by the way, have you seen the new Batman movie? Like I'll just, because I do kind of have undiagnosed ADHD. So I just have random thoughts that bombard me all the time. And I'll be like, oh, that reminds me of this squirrel. And then I'll just ask the player next to me something. And I do that. And I know I do it. And I try not to, but I hate it.
That doesn't bother me at all. Because
but what's worse for me is, and there's a guy, Scott, if you're listening to this, you used to piss me off when you do this. He would bring his laptop and he would just pull up random YouTube clips. Like we'd be playing and he would just like turn his computer around. And we'd be watching, like, the Honey Badger.
That's horrible.
And it's just like, I'm talking here, you know?
If it's
like,
not porn, then that's terrible.
Yeah, well, no, I don't watch porn with guys. That's just weird.
That's not weird.
Way off topic. But, yes, like, that's what really bothers me is when, and it's nothing to do with the game. Like, it's just like a random, like, oh, have you seen this? And he flips around and it's some crazy thing on YouTube. Or it's a webcomic. And even if it's D&D related, you know, that's like when we have our lunch break or when the Chinese food shows up because it's always 10 minutes late. So when we're all stopping and getting our food, that's the time to pull out your computer and go, hey, did you see this? Or after the game when we're all packing up or before the game as I'm still getting my notes ready. But when we're actually in the game, I don't want you to start showing the cool stuff on your computer. To me, that's terrible.
That's way past acceptable.
That's like disrespectful at that point.
Yeah. That's just attention. I think there's no reason why that can't be done at another time, and it's just attention. You're just trying to get attention.
I do it trying to be funny, or if I just get distracted. But people who actually use their, it drives me insane.
I want things to happen at the table that make me laugh. Like I've learned that is a big reward for me while I'm there. The story is part of it. Getting a cool story, finding new things out, you know, moving forward. The action and the fighting is part of it. That's, you know, another element to it. Then laughing at the table, I'm, that's a big part of who I am. You know, like watch, TV shows daily based on whether or not they make me laugh.
Right.
Like I don't watch too many dramas. Like I watch comedies and I want things to happen at the table that make me laugh. And so when something happens at the table where somebody brings something up and says, oh, that reminds me of this, blah, 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 blah. And then that's it. And we all laugh. Great. Like I keep doing it. Like I want that to happen. But if it's like, oh, that reminds me of this movie, you've never seen it? Okay, let me tell you about it. Then, no, you know, you say, you've never seen it? Okay, when this is over,
go
I
got to
tell
that.
You about it.
Right.
You know, when this game is over. But do it when I'm a player, too. You know, I say, oh, man, that's funny. That's just like this. Ha, 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 you know.
Right.
I want those laugh breaks. It's like applause breaks when the comedian's doing his stand-up thing.
Right. So he takes a drink of water. Everybody laughs. The DM drinks his water, looks at his notes,
and then,
ready to start back.
Right back into it, yeah.
So that's fine. So if you're listening to this, if you're that guy, you're pissing other people off at the table, and they may not be telling you that. If you're the guy who's turning your laptop around saying, hey, have you seen this? Right in the middle of the game. Wait till there's a down moment. DM has to go use the bathroom. Pizza arrives, and people are getting up, getting plates. That's the time for the laptop spin around. Other than that, no. All right, so I want to move into another topic, kind of sort of what relates to this as well. This is another one from my buddy Rob, is how do you reward someone who does a good job role-playing while not at the same time kind of criticizing people who don't roleplay well or mm-hmm. just within the game. And for me, we've kind of touched on this before. What I used to do a long time ago, I had a chart that I made up, and if you did certain things in the game, then you got like this sort of random XP bonus. And it was something like every time you got a critical hit, you just put a little check mark on your character sheet, and you know, every critical hit was a 50 experience point bonus. Every time you fumbled, you got 10. If you rolled a natural 20 on a skill check, you got 25 experience points. And just all these sort of random mechanical D20 related things would happen and you get experience points. And then we would have a kind of at the end of the night, I actually had little slips that I wrote out where every player would nominate who they thought did the best that night. And the best was whatever criteria you wanted. Usually it was role play, but it could also be funny or combination. And everybody would vote, and I would tally the sheets, and I would say, okay, so tonight everybody got 1,000 experience points, but Evan was voted, you know, most popular tonight, so you get an extra 100. You got a 10% bonus for being the funniest person tonight.
So back then, you really, as a DM, you paid more attention to XP than you do now. Because you've said now, just kind of level people, like, okay, now you're...
Right, and that's kind of the evolution of that, is that it almost always was the same person. Every now and then, you might have a second person jump in, but generally speaking, it was the same person every time who got voted as the funniest or the best role player. So at some point, it stopped being, you know, the whole point was to encourage other people to try, but all it did was just reward the person who was already naturally good at it. So I kind of got away from that. And so it kind of long-term evolution, like I said, I don't do XP at all anymore. I just do story-based experience. And I'll drop a secret on you. This is some crazy knowledge. I don't even really do story-based XP. I do session-based XP.
That's what I've been doing. I only tallied your XP once. Other than that, like...
We just kind of level when you want us to, right?
Yeah, I'm like, now's a good time.
And I'm fine with that. For me, usually, it's 4 levels. So you start at first level, four sessions. We'll play 4 sessions, and then you'll level. And then the next time, you go 5 sessions, and then you level. And then you go 6 sessions, and then you level. And I just kind of keep that progression. And usually when it gets about 8, that's probably the max, and then like every 8th session, you'll level. For me, that game that I end up leaving that I hated, and I'm not exaggerating, I went from level 16 to level 23 in one night, and all I did was play Brick Breaker on my phone. Like, I couldn't tell you anything that happened. But people were leveling, like, willy-nilly, and I hate that. For me, it's kind of like getting a new toy. Every time I level, I get new stuff. I want to have a chance to use all that stuff. I want to play with it. I want to experiment with it. I want to see what I can do before I get my next new toy. You know, it's like if your birthday and Christmas are on the same week, I don't want to get them like close together. So give me level 2. Let me have some time to play with level 2 before I get level 3. That's a Michael thing. There's other people who may wish they leveled faster, because I am known amongst the circles that I play with that I have very slow games. You know, we've been playing.
I know. I would like to level faster in your games.
Yeah, that's because that's good criticism. Maybe I should do it a little faster than that.
Well, it's probably just because I haven't played that much, and I don't think I've played a character over 5th or 6th level. I just want to.
Yeah.
That's all.
And that's fair. You know, that's a fair criticism.
And I don't want to wait 2 years to do it.
And, you know, there's some traffic been on the internet lately with the D&D Next playtest. People were asking, like, how fast? Like, there was a poll question. I don't remember exactly how it was asked, but it was basically, if you play a regular session every week, how long should it take you to get level 12? And my response wasn't even on there, because it was longer than any of the ones that it put. For me, that's like 3 years, maybe, to get to level 12. That's the type of game that I like to run. I like very slow, and it's just like movies. I like slow, character-driven movies. I don't need a lot of action. Like, I enjoy those action movies, but the movies that really stick with me are character driven, and that's the type of game that I try to run. I'm not saying I do a good job, but that's what I'm aiming for. So what I've done now is I just do story-based XP, or basically just session. You level when I think you should. So now I use hero points as my in-game reward for someone who does something creative or funny or good role-playing. And the reason I think that works well is that everybody gets them when you level, but you get more of them for doing the cool stuff that I reward you. So it's not like the people who maybe are just shy and they're not good at role playing, or they're too awkward to really be a boisterous personality. They're still going to get hero points. They're just not going to get as many as the other person. It doesn't really affect their level. So you're looking at me kind of crazy. So do you not agree or you don't understand?
That's just my face, Michael.
What do you say? Well, then
you got that crazy face.
Could you put the knife down?
I don't know. Like, hero points are just okay to me. I don't really love them when you give them to me. I'm not like, yes. And I get my stance on it is probably like, I wouldn't miss them. I don't have an idea for something to do that would be better. So, it's kind of pointless. Like, what you're doing isn't good, but okay, well, what should I do better? Well, I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know, but, in your game, it's a poker chip that you give to the players.
So you physically have it.
Mm-hmm. And then when you are doing something, when the player is doing something and he wants some extra help on his roll, he can hand that poker chip back over to you, but like cash in his hero point.
Right.
And then he gets to do what?
You roll a D6, and then you add or subtract that from the D20 based on what you're trying to accomplish. Or you can also use it to affect damage. So basically, for each hero point, you can maximize or minimize one of the die that is rolled as a damage. So if you, because I think Rob did this the other night, he rolls a D12, he hit successfully, so he gave me a hero token, he automatically did 12 points of damage plus his modifiers. So basically, if you were being hit by something and you're close to death and you don't want to die, you give me that token and one of the D10s I roll is automatically a 1. If there's multiple dice, then you still roll the other ones, but you can spend as many hero points as you want in that specific situation. And basically, it's just a way to kind of spend fate either in your direction or away from the other guy. I do have a sort of a homebrew rule that you can use a feat. So at 3rd, 6th, or 9th level, or a bonus feat as a fighter, you could turn that D6 into a D8 or a D10 or all the way up to a D12. So the math swing is a little bit bigger, but no one's ever done that other than me in my game when other people like run for me. No one's ever taken that option. But basically, it's a either between a 5% and a 30% swing in your favor or a damage swing in your favor just as a way to reward. And usually I give them away for being funny. That's like that's the number one reason somebody gets them is they just crack a joke or they say something silly. And usually it's in-game. But, you know, same thing. If they quote a movie that's just, like, perfect, then I'll give them a hero token.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Usually it's a funny comment, more than like a really good role play situation.
So you use them more like you're the king and you have these jesters yes. and like, make me laugh and you'll get a gold coin.
Absolutely. That's what happens. You make me laugh, you
dance
get a token.
For me, fool.
Dance for That's exactly the way it works. So that's my way to kind of encourage, like you said, humor at the table is a big part of what we're trying to do. We're there to have fun. And if you're making the experience more fun for me, then I'll reward you with a token.
So have you ever thought that you could reward a person with a token, but then the token means something else? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with dice rolling. Like, maybe you get this token, and it's good for something back in your town. Or, you know, you might level us ahead of, like, if you're not going to level for 8 sessions, maybe just you get to level tonight, everybody else gets to levels like next week or...
Yeah, I mean, I could see doing something different. That might be a little bit extreme.
If you get enough hero tokens, you can get this special item.
See, that's more of like a video game or metagame process. And I'm not saying it's any better or worse than what I'm doing, but I just kind of like... Because the idea of the
I'm just throwing out different ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of the kind of the hero token is sort of like, you know, you're the hero, so fate swings in your favor. So the D6 roll or the dice roll for damage just makes it more likely you'll live or more likely you'll survive or you'll kill that thing. So it kind of fits within the motif of being a hero anyways. There's probably people that have 24 different in-game rewards that they use, whether they use tokens or something else.
Like tickets at the arcade.
Yeah, you get 1,000 tickets, you get a +1 magic weapon. And I'm sure there's people that do that, and their players, you know, some of them probably love that. But the way that I'm more of a character-driven story, I don't really want to tie, an item in the game to that token. But, which is another thing, I'm low magic too, so I do slow games, and nobody ever gets magic items. Like, ever.
Like if you, like your games do not sound fun when you describe them. They are fun. I do like because you write interesting stories and there's plot twists and it's about characters and stuff like that. But when you like, if you were describing your game to somebody, it would just sound so boring.
Probably. And that's just part of my...
But I have these hero tokens.
The way I grew up in D&D, like I've played through what's commonly called Monty Hall campaigns. And that's from the old Let's Make a Deal game show where he'd be like, all right, who's got a paperclip? And somebody would have a paperclip in the purse. Like I've played in games where, oh, we're fighting werewolves. Okay, I have a +4 weapon against lanthrocopes or whatever. Oh, we're fighting vampires. I got a +6 mace against vampires. Like, they just have like a golf bag of stuff they carry around with them. In every situation, they have the perfect. And well, to me, so that's just dumb. I hate it. So for me, I just got rid of that completely.
But it makes sense in the world that those items exist.
Not really. Because when you really think about all the effort that's required to make magic items, who's making all these magic items that are just randomly littering the world?
Well, that's if you treat it like a video game where in every chest you come across, there's this many gold, a magic helmet, and something. Right. And like, but
and we're getting way into a different topic, but my argument is if you kill the king of the goblins and you open his treasure chest and there's a +4 Vorpal sword, why wasn't the king of goblins using it against you? He would have, and he would have killed you with it.
Well,
the end.
Yeah, but that's just one. I mean, that's a good argument against it, but that's not the end-all be-all of why it shouldn't be in
there.
It
isn't my game, damn it.
I mean, you just write it into the story in a different way. You know, it's buried somewhere.
Well, and that stuff, I mean, people do get magic items in my game, but they're a bigger deal. If you get a +1 magic weapon in my game, it should have a story to it. It's not just, oh, I have a +1 weapon. It's the +1 weapon of Argonoth, and you know it was the sword that killed the Minotaur.
Okay, well,
and
it's not really off topic because this ties in with how do you reward players. I actually would really enjoy those magic items more than the hero points. When I play video games, I like acquiring bigger and better things that you know give me bonuses and stuff like that. And I understand, I don't really understand what makes you so frustrated about, a lot of people having different magic items. But you're the DM. If you don't want people to, like, just have an arsenal for anything that they come across, they have something to deal with it, then you don't have to give them all that different stuff. But at the same time, what's wrong? It makes the play, as a player, it makes me feel good to be like, I'm prepared for anything. Now, maybe as a DM, you have a scenario come up where it's just everything I have is useless. And as a DM, you sit back and laugh and go, ha, you know, now, Casey Jones, what are you going to do? But as the player, I don't know if I speak for very many other players. You know, I've only played with a few people, but I like acquiring those items, and maybe, you know, if it's just a +1 sword, or it doesn't have to be something really powerful, but just the idea that it's kind of like having the right tool for the job. Like when something breaks on your car, it's a good feeling to go, all I have to do is go to the garage, I already got that tool, I'll bring it back and I'll fix it. And when you come to a situation and you're like, I got the right tool for the job, it's kind of a good feeling.
And what's funny is I'm much more likely to give out those odd magic items than I am magic weapons or armor. Like in my games, you are much more likely to find a ring that gives you invisibility powers or a ring that you don't have to eat or you can breathe underwater. Like I'm much more likely to give out those type of those types of magic items than a +1 sword.
And maybe you make the encounters tougher, so it really doesn't even matter. The fact that I have a +1 sword seriously didn't make the encounter go any better. But in my mind, it is. In my mind, I have the +1 sword.
And that's very fair criticism. And you know, and I'm just a creature of habit. And even the people in my current game, like they have said semi-jokingly, kind of in that way when you're talking to your girlfriend and you're like, you want to make out? Just kidding, unless you want to. You know, like they'll say things like,
am I going to get a sword?
Are we going to get a magic weapon? You know, like they'll say things. So I think they are legitimately also frustrated. And maybe that's something I should look at, that if you save up, you know, your hero tokens, you turn them in as like 10 of them, And then I do allow a magic item where you can find the... I still make it part of a story. Like, it's not just like, oh, and it appears. But, okay, here's my 10 hero tokens. My character now wants to quest for that plus one sword of Argonauth. And that's just the next story, so I'll let them do that.
Maybe that's a big critique, is that you seem to be DMing a lot of players who want this. But as the DM, you don't like to do that.
Yeah, I don't want to give it to them.
So, I mean, that's a good example of something that,
I can work on.
You don't like to do, but you're playing with people who do want that.
So it's funny because we're kind of running a little bit long on time. I know we're going to cut some of this out, but I do want to get to one more topic before we quit, because I want to talk a little bit about the new game I'm starting. Because it's really funny that we give that criticism, because I'm going to go even farther to the other extreme. And I'm going to think about this as an experiment. All right, now I posted this on the website. I didn't put all the details in case you didn't read it, though I've already talked to you a little bit about it, so you still kind of know what's coming, but not as much. But, like, there's a spectrum of how crazy I want to get with this game, and I just want to take your kind of your pulse on, do you want me to go full batshit crazy or just a little bit crazy? So what I mean by this is, as you know, the game is going to start in this humongous city that's just ridiculously big. But it's a self-contained environment. No one ever leaves the city. No one comes to the city. It's like a socialist.
It's like Detroit. No one comes in.
No one leaves. No one leaves. But it's a closed environment. It's like a socialist community that there's no such thing as wealth. Like you have a job. You're a farmer. You make food so other people eat. They make clothes so you can wear them. Like there's no such thing as wealth within the city. And
there'd be trade.
No. I mean, everything, basically, you're assigned a job when you become of age, and you're responsible for doing that job, and you give away whatever you create, and other people give away what they create. So there's no way to accumulate any sort of wealth. There's no such thing as a gold coin, nothing. All right? So you're just part of this communist community.
Okay, I think there's a big flaw in this already that I want to address, but I'm not going to.
So we'll move on.
Keep going.
Okay, so you're part of this city and this environment, and I really want the players to create a character, a person that would live in this environment. So you are Bob the Baker, and you're 45 years old, and you have a wife, and you have three kids, and you know your kids' names, and you know their birthdays, and you know you want to make the best pie in the world because it's your wife's birthday coming up, and that's what you're focused on. Not, I want to get a sword or fighting orcs. I mean, you're just, imagine you're this commoner in this city, and that's what you do, and that's your life. And I've got some ideas that I might have like a random way of you guys, whether or not you know each other. So if you are the baker and the other guy is the clothier or whatever, that you guys are friends. And maybe you play no money poker on the weekends together type of a thing. And then right off the bat, like as soon as I set the stage and everybody's kind of comfortable and okay, I'm Bob the Baker, bam, you get exiled and now you're out of the city. And you're in this vast wilderness, like you have no weapons, you have no armor, you have no training. A lot of this kind of came from the TV show Lost, is you're just lost. Like you have no base of operations. How are you going to survive? And the PCs would have to come together and trust one another. And I've got some stuff I want to build in that certain people might not be trustworthy, and their secrets and all kinds of stuff to kind of sow some dissension at the same time. And that's basically where the game's going to start. So night one, I'll set you up in the city. I kind of want to trick the players. I want the players to think that the game is going to happen in the city and then just instantly take them out of that so that they as a player will have that same sense of, holy crap, I'm not prepared for this at all because that's what I want to do. But see, this is how crazy I want to get with it. I want to do everything random. So you would roll a dice and that would determine what race you are. You'd roll a dice and that would determine what occupation you have, whether you're a baker, an artist, or a clothier, a furrier, or a trapper, or whatever. And then not even give you your character sheets. Like, I would create your character sheets for you, and I would have them. And you'd play that first game without even having it in front of you. And I would only describe in relation to other people. Like, okay, Evan, you're bigger than everyone else. You're stronger. You're clearly stronger than other characters. But Nico's character, he's always using big words. He's the smart guy. And you would just play without any character. You just tell me what you want to do. And I would tell you whether or not you succeeded. So that's the far end, no character sheet.
For everything's random. This is how the whole game will go?
Well, just to start. Because at some point, you're going to become a leveled character, like if you survive. Once you're in the wilderness, I've got some things set up. So like if somebody wants to play a wizard, something would happen pretty early on to give them the ability to become a wizard. But for that first session, maybe even first two sessions, it's just you know, again, that whole Lost thing where it's almost like a metagame, you don't have a character sheet, so you are just kind of floating around. And I think as an experiment, it might be cool, but I don't know if people would really like doing it or
not. So the first couple of games, would there be combat?
Yeah.
If we initiated it?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be like, but it might be like a boar, like you have to kill something for food.
We wouldn't know if we could do, or we wouldn't have, we're level zero.
Yep. So you have no attacks to, other than strength. Like if you're
monitoring our hit points. Yep. We don't have any abilities. We don't.
Yep. It would just be, it'd be realistically like if you and I got dropped into the wilderness right now, you've got military background. I grew up playing in the woods. So I could say, I know how to do this, and you've got military training, you know how to do that, and we might be able to work things out. But it's not like we're dropping into combat with a machine gun and a buck knife and a combat vest. I mean, we're going to be totally unprepared, or the PCs are going to be totally unprepared for the environment they're
That's
in.
That's how you want it. So, like,
to start.
Okay, so when we get dropped, like, okay, we're exiled, whatever happens, we're banished, then we all get dropped together, then you slide the papers across the table?
But not even necessarily them, but, like, as you start to do stuff. You know, like, okay, I'm the strongest guy. I want to try to take a rock, and I'll just throw it at something if I need to. Another guy who's maybe the fast guy, okay, well, I'll take a sharp stick and try to poke at things. And, you know, the first combats are probably going to be against, like, a wild animal that you have to kill to eat, or maybe a big snake. There might be a stream that you swim in, and there's a monster in there that you're not aware of. So it's all going to be very sort of environmental, natural predator type of thing. And then as the game progresses, you're going to, there's going to be a bigger world than the PCs know about. And at some point, you're going to step into that world, and you're like, oh, okay. And then, you know, there'll be a place to go and get armor and weapons. And you almost like, just like, oh, my God, there's this whole world we never knew about that was right outside our door. And then you're kind of grow into that. And that's the point. Like, when you become a first-level character, I'll be like, okay, here's your character sheet. But until then, which probably be one session, maybe two, just tell me what you want to do, and I'll tell you what happens. And I just don't know. I'm afraid that it's a good idea, like maybe like a novel idea for the whole thing I've got. I just don't know if it would be fun for the players to play in that type of game.
I would, for me, I would say a couple things. One is that I would say, let's do it just to do it. So that when it's over,
we know if it worked
like,
or not.
That was cool or it sucked. So I'd be open to do it just to do it. A couple things that I would say about it is that, one, I think that as a DM, you would have to be more open and to your players' suggestions of what's working and what's not than you probably ever have before. And because if they're not liking how it's going, then you, what are you going to do? Are you going to just stop and say, okay, this isn't working, I'll start something different? Or will you be able to just work, keep the same story, keep everything going, but work in the characters without just saying, okay, this wasn't working, okay, here's your sheets, we'll just start over?
Well, I do have two minds. In my head, I wanted to tell you guys, all right, you know, give me four sessions. And if you're not having fun after four sessions, we'll do something
different.
Will
we not have character sheets for four sessions?
No, you'll have them probably at the end of the first or sometime during the second.
I was going to say, the other thing was that for me, I know for me, if we go through a full 4 hours, usually what our sessions are, 3.5 maybe, if we do that twice, I will probably be bored out of my mind. Because can you get story? I would be open to it, and I wouldn't even be thinking that much about how I don't have a character sheet in front of me if I was interested in what's going on. So if we're just in the city and we're starting here and you're just like, okay, go do what you want to do, I am going to be like, well, what do you mean? Like, I'm just going to go to the bar. Okay, well, this isn't fun for me. But if you get us involved in a story right away so that we're not even thinking about the fact that that this other part is different, then it would probably be fine. Because we only refer to our character sheets for certain things in combat anyways, or if we want to try an ability, or if we're going to make a roll for, you know, is this guy lying or something like that.
Right.
The other part of the most of our decision making is just, you know, character sheet aside, here's what I'd like to do. And we can still do all that. So I would just say that as long as we're in a story right away that's fun, I think that it would probably be fine. And I'd be open to doing right. it anyways, just to see how it goes.
And like I said, I just want to try, like I said, 4 sessions. If you guys are having fun, we'll keep going. If not, we can either just start something completely different, or I could just fast forward to, okay, you're now in this bigger world that's there, and it's more like a traditional D&D world, but you're not going to have access to it right away. That's part of that whole Lost thing. The other thing I thought I might do is the next time we play your game, have you, Nico, and Rob roll all those roles that you won't know what they mean, you know, for your race and for your profession and that kind of stuff, and then email you, all right, this is what you got. So you're a dwarven male and you're a blacksmith. Let's go with the stereotype. And you would know that. So when you came to the game that first night, you would already know, and you could be working on your background and your story, if you're married or single, how old you are. You know, did you start off trying to be something else? Like, did you want to be a baker and you failed at it, so now you're a blacksmith? So that way, like, within the first few minutes of the game, I can exile you, which is where the story really starts, rather than that first game having everybody roll all those roles and try to figure out their backgrounds. And
that would probably be a good way of doing it. Yeah, so you do it ahead of time.
Yeah, so you come with, okay, I'm Bob the Baker, you know, and hopefully my goal is that you get into this true persona. Like, you know that you have kids, and, you know, you're excited about that. You know your wife's name, and you know your neighbor's name, because you think that's the type of game it's going to be. And then I pull the rug out from under the players day one, and there's just that, again, metagame. The players are lost, and the characters are lost.
The way now I'm thinking about it in a different way. And it doesn't sound fun to me, because
I should have stopped talking.
Because this is how I'm thinking about it now. Basically, it's Vietnam, and you and me are here. We have our jobs that we have now. We are our own people. We've been alive for this amount of time. We're this kind of person. We're big. We're strong. We're fast. Whatever. Now we're drafted.
You're drafted.
And the Army says, okay, now you are a cook. Now you are a
infantry.
Yeah. Now you are a tanker. Regardless of whether that's what you want to be or not, that's how I'm feeling about it now. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like fun. I mean, because I don't have any choice over it. So I don't know. At first, I was like, I mean, okay.
And I know that it is an experiment and it could fail, but I think every person, and this is a real world person, that would be honest with themselves, there's this sort of secret feeling that you're special. And it's, you know, very typical of like a superhero movie. You know, everybody thinks they're special. Everybody thinks that if the zombie attack happens tomorrow, you're the survivor. Mm-hmm. Like, no one in their head thinks, I'll be the first one dead. No, I'm going to be the guy leading the resistance. I'm going to be the Rick Grimes of the zombie apocalypse. Or, you know, I'm going to be the main character that survives the asteroid attack that wipes out half the population. So even though that does happen, when you're put into this larger world, I think there'll be a sense of, maybe this is what I was really meant for. I've been a baker for 10 years, but it really didn't make me happy. And now I have this chance to affect, you know, so many other things. I'm hoping that sense of wonderment will kick in.
Are we going to be able to decide what, class we are?
Yes.
And so you're play,
You're going to start as a zero level commoner, but if you're somebody who's like, when you get in that situation, you're like, well, I want to be a fighter, then you can, whenever that happens where you level, can choose to be a fighter. If you're somebody who's like, I want to be a wizard, then there's going to be something happening in the game that will give you access to that knowledge that you could do that as well.
How do you want to do the stats?
Well, the way I was going to do the stats, going back to that matrix I talked mm-hmm. about, I was going to roll out an entire matrix and then have you randomly roll, and one of your rolls would be which stat line you picked. So when you got your character sheet in the email, or the character, you'd say, okay, so if I do tell you your stats, and I might just say you're above average strength, you're below average intelligence, you know, and give you those rather than getting your actual numbers, you're really strong. You know, if you have a 17 or you're the strongest person you ever met, you always win in, you know, arm wrestling competitions, or you're the smartest person you know, you read a lot of books, and it kind of tell you that way. So again, trying to create a person and not just a bunch of stats on a piece
when
of
you
paper.
When you do traditional character sheets, when you're rolling for your stats for your first time, do you start with strength and you roll the dice and that's strength? Is that the way it's supposed to go? Or do you roll the dice and get to choose where that's going to go?
Well, and then original like D&D from the Middle Ages when it was first created, you rolled in order 3d6, whatever you got's what you got, and then you could only
so
pick
my first roll of the dice is going to be my strength.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the way it was originally written very early on, and I don't know if it was optional within the original rules or not, but pretty early on people stopped doing that. Like in original basic D&D, you had things that were called prime requisites, and basically if you wanted to be a fighter, you had to have a certain strength score. And if you didn't have that score, you could not be a fighter. So if you rolled your stats and you just didn't have the stats to do it, you couldn't be the class you wanted. And for a lot of people, that's the part that wasn't fun, which is kind of funny because that's what I'm talking about, taking away the player choice. So people said, okay, well, if you want to be a fighter, you can manipulate them so that you can at least get a score good enough to be a fighter. If you want to be – the paladin was kind of like the go-to example because the paladin had three prime requisites. You had to have a certain strength, you had to have a certain charisma, and you had to have a certain, I think, wisdom. So you had to have three scores out of six that were randomly assigned that had to be at least, I think, a 15 or better to be a paladin. So back then, if you qualified, like you almost guaranteed picked it. If you're like, holy crap, I can be a paladin, it was amazing that you could do that. Where now,
was it amazing to be a paladin?
I don't know.
Any better? Like, I mean, it was harder to get to be one, but was
it
worth it?
Again, in the original, like basic D&D, the paladin, I guess advanced actually, they had the same fighter advancement as a fighter, but they had extra cool stuff too. So yeah, so they were a little bit more powerful of a character.
So I don't know. So you're taking that away from us.
Right.
And so, like, I might, I don't know. I mean, because I want to go into your game.
I think it could be awesome, but it could suck. And I kind of know that.
Well, again, we're it's back to your head versus our head,
Right. So I hope people will be willing to try it. And then, like I said, give me four sessions. And if after four, or like if the first two are just god awful, we may, okay, scrap it. But if it's kind of like maybe, I'm liking parts of it, I think four sessions is enough to hit my stride. And if the game's not going well, then it's not going to get any better. And then we'll just either jump into the next section of that game and make it more traditional, or we'll just let you guys reroll characters, pick your classes, and we'll do something like that. And the next time I might actually go completely the other way, like we talked about, where you guys roll your characters and you just tell me, we want to be pirates. Okay, I'll make a pirate game. Or you want to be bad guys. Okay, I'll make a bad guy. You together as a group, roll your characters, pick your classes, decide what type of people you want to do or be, and I will just create a game around that rather than me creating a game and putting you into it. So I'll go from one extreme to the other, and we'll see which one people like best. All right, well, thanks for listening. This is Michael.
And this is Evan. And again, please comment, and if you have any ideas for any topics for us to talk about, please let us know, and we'll see you next time.
And follow us on Twitter at Dice Monkeys, and maybe you can be the reason I'm distracted during the games.
All right. See ya.